How are music therapists changing the lives of people in Canada?
What is the latest research and trends?
You are tuned into the Canadian Music Therapy Podcast,
and we will explore these questions with our guest today.
Let's get started.
Welcome to the Canadian Music Therapy Podcast. We're your hosts, Adrian and Kathy. Today, we are speaking with Kristen DeMarco about her journey to become a music therapist and her specialization in pediatric hospice work. Kristen also tells us more about her vision for the future of the profession of music therapy in Canada.
And here's a little more about Kristen. Kristen is a certified music therapist and registered psychotherapist and holds a Bachelor of Music Therapy from Wilfrid Laurier University and a Master of Arts in Creative Arts Therapies from Concordia University. Kristen is the music therapist at Emily's House Children's Hospice, where she supports children and families who are navigating life-limiting illness and loss through both the inpatient and home visiting programs. She's been practicing music therapy for over 8 years and previously worked with adults in community, hospital, and long-term care settings. She's also serving on the board of directors of the Music Therapy Association of Ontario, and she was in the role of government regulation chair for 3 years and has now transitioned to the role of ethics chair.
Welcome to the podcast, Kristen. We're excited to have you here from Toronto, Ontario.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
I want to learn more about your journey to become a music therapist. Can you share that with us today?
Absolutely. So I completed my bachelor in music therapy, but it was a big decision to decide to even pursue that, I'd say. When I was in high school, I was deciding between composition and music therapy, not really having a lot of experience with either. But growing up, music had been a part of my life. I started learning the piano, but what really touched me and kind of created a spark and a lot of meaning with music was when I started singing and taking voice lessons, which is when I was about 12, 13. I really had a lot of experiences with voice and with singing in choir that were really an opportunity to connect me with people. Really connect me with myself as well and kind of my own identity. And at that age, kind of in the mid-teens, it was really important to help me feel like I had a place. And I don't think I realized really in the moment that that was the experience I was having, but upon reflecting on it, that really was what led me to really understand the power of music and how meaningful and special it can be. So I decided to pursue a music degree and did a Bachelor in Music Therapy. I was really lucky to have fallen in love with the work. Of course, when I was an intern, I felt uncomfortable and was really growing my skills, but the work really stood out to me as something that felt like a good fit. And from there, I went on to do my first internship in hospice and palliative care, which was absolutely fantastic and really, I think, sparked the trajectory for my career in music therapy. I did a little bit of work after my bachelor's and my first internship for the CAMT, and then went back to do my master's degree. And that was at Concordia in creative arts therapy. And really what spurred that for me was wanting to, here in Ontario, we have the College of Registered Psychotherapists, and I was wanting to dive more into the psychotherapy work within music therapy. That really spoke to me. All of those choices around really trying to find my path and find the areas within music therapy that called to me have led me on the path where I am today.
That's really interesting. And I love that journey and how, you know, you weren't taking voice lessons when you were little and it was sort of all the way along. It was really at that transition into high school and really sparking that love for you. And then in terms of that program, the creative arts therapies, were there other arts therapies that you also delved into a little bit during that time?
That's a great question. So within my stream, I did focus on music therapy, but there were other therapists, art therapists and drama therapists who were within the same program that I was in. So while I wasn't learning how to be a drama therapist or art therapist, I learned a lot from working alongside them. So I was specifically focused on music therapy, but it was really wonderful to be in such a creative space with other allied creative arts therapists.
Great. Yeah, I think that would be really interesting to be in that environment and even pick up some of those modalities that maybe can transfer over into your work, depending on the therapy that you're doing. So, and then how did you come to specialize in the pediatric hospice work?
I think that is such a great question, and one that I sometimes I'm surprised that I'm in this work myself. So I mentioned that I did an internship, my first internship in adult hospice care, and that the palliative care model really spoke to me. I really have a passion for practicing, working to support people's quality of life and working in that really special period of working with people at the end of their life and through grief and bereavement and loss. And everything that comes with that. So initially I had been working with adults, and I had worked with adults in other settings as well. But throughout my training and even while I was doing some private practice, I was working with children in different respects. And in my adult hospice work, I had worked to support children, usually children of adult clients. So the opportunity came up to work in a pediatric hospice here in Toronto. I had actually heard about the hospice before this opportunity came up, and I was intrigued by the idea of supporting people in end of life who are children. I wasn't sure, because I didn't have the experience working in pediatric hospice care, whether I could do it. And so I really took some time to reflect, but I also realized there are so few pediatric hospices in the country that most music therapists don't have that opportunity to have that experience and that skill. And I knew that I really believed in how music can support people, music therapy specifically can support people at end of life and through different illness trajectories. And so I learned more about that. I applied for the position and was really proud when I got the position and started working at Emily's Host Hospice, where I am now. And it has been a big learning curve, in a sense. Working with children, youth, and families is very different than working with adults. There are still so many of the same principles to palliative care that apply, though. And so I've been very lucky to connect with other therapists who work in pediatric in the city of Toronto. I have had a lot of peer support in that way, connection that really validates the work that I'm doing as well, knowing that there's so much similarity there. I've been able to receive support through professional supervision and music therapy as well. And I should mention, going back a little bit, I did do a certificate in death, dying, and bereavement. And I think that really did set me up with a foundational knowledge around what it's like to work with children through grief and in palliative care as well. So there's been a lot of learning and adjusting, finding out about children and their developmental needs and how they understand illness and death and loss, and how to support parents and families at different stages. But it was almost like a leap of faith in a way, just trusting in my skills and ability to do so, and a mix of really hard and intentional work as well.
Kristen, thanks for sharing all of this, and thanks for, I think it's really important for us to be here talking about this today, and I think music therapists listening and others are gonna be really curious to hear about the work that you're doing. I think it's important for people to really understand how much reflection and you put into making the decisions around stepping into this work, and how much preparation you also have had, because you mentioned your first internship in hospice palliative care, and your second internship was also in hospice palliative care during graduate school. And then I forgot or didn't know that you had also completed that certificate. And just curious about that, if somebody was interested in that, is that through Wilfrid Laurier?
Yes, yes. So I did that certificate through the social work faculty with Wilfrid Laurier.
Excellent. And I think though a lot of those offerings are online. Not that I'm doing an advertisement here. I just thought I'd mention that in case, listeners across the country are curious about how to learn more in these areas. We are really excited to learn and hear more about the kind of work that you're doing supporting children and families at Emily's House.
And it is really special work. So Emily's House is a 10-bed inpatient hospice in Toronto, and they also have a home visiting program as well, visiting families within their own homes. There is a branch of the organization as well that does home visiting for adults as well. And so music therapy is a part of all of these streams, which is really fantastic. There's a lot of diversity in the work that's being done. But focusing on the pediatric side, I might speak to the in-house or the in-hospice programs and then the community programs as well. But for our programs that we have, and I think a lot of other models of hospice pediatric programs across the country have some similarities too. We support families throughout their trajectory, when they have a child who has a life-limiting illness. And life-limiting illness is a really broad category. Sometimes we follow families who have, or most of the time we're following families who have a child that have really complex care needs and children who are quite fragile. A lot of the children we see are in and out of the hospital a lot. And then sometimes they are also coming for respite support at the house, which is when a child's able to come and stay at the house. Their family doesn't usually stay with them, and they have dedicated nursing care and recreation and therapeutic programs that are available to them. So as a music therapist, I'm meeting children while they're there for respite to support, using music for communicating, using music to, part of it is really just supporting joy and having moments of enjoyment during their day. Having opportunities to create memories is really important in legacy. While parents aren't usually there, sometimes we're taking photos and videos of what we're doing together. And those are kind of twofold, in a way, for families to see what we're doing and to know that good care is happening, but also their memories to look back on, which is really beautiful. Another part of our programs are to support people in transitional care. And that looks maybe like someone's been at the hospital and they are going to be going home, but they need a little bit more support. And they might not need that level of support at the hospital, but they can receive support at our hospice facility. And sometimes that's a few days, sometimes that's a few weeks. And so meeting a family there is a little bit different, because I'm often trying to get a sense of what their connection is to music, if they have one, and finding out how a child responds to music and seeing if there's ways that they might be able to take aspects of connecting with music into their routines when they go home, whether that's to support comfort and relaxation around procedures, or whether that's to support meaningful connection between family members. And then another stream, of course, that we have at the hospice is children and families who come for end of life. And for end of life admissions that we have, families are able to stay, there's beds and rooms for families and children to stay together. And the approach to that care can look very different and diverse. So we might see a newborn at the house for end of life, or we might see an 18-year-old at the house who's receiving supports. And then we might see people who have no siblings, or there might be four siblings who are coming. There might be grandparents and extended family. So it is really beautiful to be able to meet people and their families and their loved ones wherever they are, to find out how music therapy might be a part of their journey at end of life. I think the work can look so different, but an example maybe of what an end-of-life support in music therapy looks like is a beautiful case where we had a child come in. They were around 2 years old, and both of their parents stayed at the house with them. They stayed at the house for a couple months, so I was able to develop a relationship with them over those few months. And one of the parents really had a love and special connection for music. So when we initially met, I was finding out what music was really meaningful for the parents, and using that in our sessions with their child, creating a special time in music where they were able just to be a family, really focusing on music and sharing their love of music with their child in a way that they hadn't really been able to do before. And this family really wanted to write a song for their child. So we wrote a song from scratch, using parts of their journey, parts of their child's journey in life so far. So naming special places, special experiences that they were able to have. They went on a lot of outings in the neighborhood close to the house and did a lot of meaningful kind of first time activities together. And that was all included in the song. Special messages that they wanted to include about their child were included in the song as well. And so sometimes families want to be a part of the recording, but for this one, I recorded the music and sang it as well. And that was something that they were able to have a recording of as really a piece of memory for their child's whole life and kind of telling the story of all the experiences that they've had, but also a special memory of their time in music therapy and something that is still with them even after their child's death too.
Oh, Kristen, such a beautiful story and example. And, you know, I can feel the beauty and the importance of the legacy work as well, but also it's so emotional.
Yeah. Beautiful. Yeah. Yeah, it can be, absolutely. There's a lot of emotion and such a range of emotion, I think, in this work. And it's been really important, I think, to name that we, or myself, I have responses to the emotions that I'm witnessing and being able to sit with that and understand it and kind of have compassion for myself has been really important. Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah. There's another aspect of the work, which is home visiting or community-based as well, that might be interesting to touch upon. I'd say there are some similarities in terms of the music therapy work that takes place in hospice when families are kind of have their home away from home there. But there's also a unique element of visiting people within their own homes. So similar to the music therapy program in hospice, I do visit families who are seeking support around respite. Sometimes I'll be involved in their care a little bit more spread out, getting to know them, checking in, finding out what their needs are around music therapy. And a lot of times that's just getting a sense of even what's possible. A lot of families have never tried using music as a way to engage or connect with their child. And so it can be really special to share those moments at home and then maybe step away for a little bit, do kind of monthly check-ins and pop back in when I'm needed more. But I also support families at home for end-of-life referrals as well. And so again, going into the home, usually a lot more frequently, to use music to support a lot of symptom management around pain or discomfort for children or youth. A lot of using music again to support memory making between families or to support connection at a time when the regular ways that families connect has shifted a little bit or become not possible. And doing a lot of legacy support as well, if that's something that's meaningful for people. So many, I want to really make a point that each family I connect with in each case that I'm involved with is different. And so it's really being responsive to the needs in the moment. But there are some examples of the work too that might be meaningful to kind of paint a better picture of what's happening. But one example maybe is of working with a teenager. I was connected with her actually at the hospice and they went home. And I was able to follow to provide care at home, which provides such a beautiful continuity in the care that happens. And so working with a teenager is a little bit different. They have a lot of music that's connected to their identity. So I was able to learn a little bit more about what music was preferred and bring that into our initial sessions to develop our relationship. Really helped to support that sense of identity when a lot was changing due to illness. There were also some elements of playing guitar because that was something that this teen really enjoyed, but was not able to do as much unfortunately, due to cognitive abilities that have been shifting due to their illness. And then as this person's illness progressed, the work shifted a little bit. There was a lot of connection with family who were at the bedside and supporting them and helping to choose those songs that they knew that their sibling really enjoyed, and using that to support comfort and pain at a time when they weren't able to talk anymore. But there was this real sense that they could still hear and feel that connection to the music that they loved so much. With this family, again, we did actually write a song together just to express the messages that the family really felt like it was important to share. And so a lot of messages about love, a lot of messages just to speak to the beautiful qualities of the person, because music was actually such a big part of this teen's life, but the whole family's, it felt like a really natural way for them to be able to express everything that they felt like was important to express at the end of life. And so in this case as well, after the teen had died, I was able to still support one of the siblings with support around their grief journey. And I think it's really important to still be able to be connected. Having that relationship beforehand can be really meaningful, especially when working with children and youth. To know that their person was known and to have some of that insight, it's not necessary, but I've been finding it is really meaningful. And then to support families afterwards, it's really important to have that continuity and to have music therapy as a way to support grief as well. It's a little bit different than using words alone or other types of therapy.
It's so important and valuable that you're able to work right from the point when you meet an individual in a family and then support a family through their grief. Like, that is really beautiful and important. And I'm really just so heartened to hear that you are able to provide this kind of care. And thank you so much for sharing the stories, because they really do illustrate what it is that you're doing in such a clear way. And again, I'm going to say heavy space to hold sometimes, I can imagine. And what a gift for you to be able to do this with the families that you're working with. I also, a memory that's coming up for me when you were in your first internship was that you actually did a project on anticipatory grief and supporting families, which I still reflect on that project and value the work that you did at that time. And I'm hearing that coming up in the way that, even in the story that you were just telling about supporting siblings and then being able to be there for them throughout the bereavement process. Now we're going to change gears a little bit completely. So thank you for illustrating all of this for us. And in the last couple of minutes, you know, I love to ask people this question. Can you tell us about your vision for the profession of music therapy?
Yes, absolutely. And it is a very exciting question. I always find the answers are so inspiring. So I do have a lot of hopes for our profession. And I think there's so much goodness in our future. But one of my visions for music therapy that's more related to the clinical work is really a hope that there's a music therapist at every care sites and in community settings and accessible through private practice as well, to really support a sense of continuity in care. And that comes out of the work that I've been doing recently. Working in pediatric care, it's been a lot more common to connect with a family of a child and hear that they know what music therapy is and that they've actually had music therapy somewhere before.
Yay.
So it's been fantastic. Yeah, I've always get pretty excited when I know that they've met so-and-so music therapist somewhere. And often I know them because it's quite a small community. And I just think how impactful and meaningful it would be and how it would kind of impact the music therapy work if there was an opportunity to do transfer of care, if we were able to collaborate as music therapists and connect to find out what clients' care looked like at one setting and then continue that work. And I do realize that's coming from my lens of working with children who do have a lot of complex care needs. So oftentimes they might move from a hospital for something more acute and then maybe move to a rehabilitation hospital and maybe be at home for a little bit, or maybe even be at a school setting where there's music therapy. And it just speaks to me that there's so much opportunity to learn from each other as music therapists. We all work in really unique ways and support clients with different goals coming from our own strengths. But I think that that is kind of inspiring to also think that we might be able to better serve our clients by knowing what care has been done and continuing that, and then just allowing clients to have more care over more years as well. So I think in the pediatric world, I'd like that to be something that can happen, but also for people of all ages, it's really meaningful. I've worked with adults too, where maybe I've seen them at home in the community, and then they're going to a palliative care unit somewhere or to a hospice somewhere. And I know that that hospice or palliative care unit has a music therapist, and it makes me so happy to know that that care can continue there. So I just hope that that moves forward and that we continue to have more and more music therapists on different interdisciplinary teams.
I love that vision, Kristen, and my brain is spinning going, okay, so how do we make this a practice standard? And I have heard this concept in different ways before, particularly in pediatric care, when people are moving between systems. And when there is the opportunity for communication between therapists, but there isn't really a means for that to be happening. And so I love this vision. And I have a feeling you're the kind of person who can keep this one going and going along with all of the other, you know, everyone else who can help to move things forward for our profession.
Beautiful. Yeah, it is something that is a dream. Of course, yes, there's not always that means or that system that's built in for how to do it, but I've slowly been walking with the idea and reaching out to other people. And I think when we come together as a community, it's all for the better.
Absolutely. Well, we really appreciate having you here with us and sharing all of this important work that you're doing and this inspirational vision as well. And so thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for joining us on the Canadian Music Therapy Podcast.
To learn more about resources from the show, please visit beyondthestudio.ca.
Thanks for listening.